Welcome back to another episode of Turning the Table. My name is Jim Taylor. For those of you who don't know, and if we haven't had a chance to connect before, thanks for joining us. Really looking forward to our conversation today. We've got an exciting topic that's a little bit different than what we sometimes normally talk about. You know, maybe we get into operations a little bit, but what we're really going to talk about today with someone that we've been looking forward to having on the show is about kind of how the sport and entertainment and hospitality worlds are kind of colliding. So we'll be right back after a quick little message. Welcome TJ Shear, COO of Big Shots Golf, to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Welcome to Turning the Table, the most progressive weekly podcast for today's food and beverage industry, featuring staff-centric operating solutions for restaurants in the hashtag new hospitality culture. Join Jim Taylor of Benchmark 60 and Adam Lamb as they turn the tables on the prevailing operating assumptions of running a restaurant in favor of innovative solutions to our industry's most persistent challenges. Thanks for joining us. And now, on to the show. This episode is made possible by eVocalize. eVocalize makes complex local digital marketing push-button easy for anyone. Empower your franchises with programs that automatically optimize performance and program spending across Google, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok, all from one easy-to-use collaborative marketing platform. To find out more, go to turningthetablepodcast.com/eVocalize.
TJ, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for making some time for us.
Yeah, appreciate it.
So, Big Shots Golf, we were talking before the show, we're hearing a lot about all these different, you know, concepts that are, combining sports and entertainment with hospitality. So I'm excited to talk to you about that. But can you just kind of introduce yourself a little bit, where you came from? What's your, you told me you had some pretty extensive background in the industry. So love to hear a little bit about it.
I've got a crooked career path. You know, it really started way back in college. I was working at Chuck E. Cheese Pizza of all places in the 80s and kind of worked my way up to VP of field support. So I was there in the late 90s when they kind of boomed, and they're still booming today, but learned a bunch about family entertainment center business and kind of tying in entertainment and food. And I know people may argue that Chuck E. Cheese isn't real food, but it is.
Absolutely.
I left in 01 and started a consulting and speaking business. So I did that for 20 years, and a big chunk of those 20 years, a group of friends and I were the largest franchisee for a brand called Witch Witch Superior Sandwiches. So, you know, I was a consultant helping others. I was doing a lot of speaking on the franchise and team building world. But then I also built, you know, our own company with a group of guys that I worked with. So I was a practitioner while I was also a speaker and a consultant. And I always tell everybody that was kind of my business PhD, owning that business and learning things about leases and construction and how to get sued and how not to get sued and stuff that you might not learn, you know, growing up in a chain. And then about 2.5 years ago, I started with a unique opportunity here at Big Shots Golf. We had one venue when I got here. We're owned by a company called Invited Clubs, which used to be known as Club Corp. And so our parent manages around 200 country clubs. They've got a sports stadium division that they manage, some college football stadiums, and then some private city clubs. And then Big Shots Golf is the golf entertainment aspect, which is their fourth silo of their business. So it's been a fun ride, and I've loved kind of tying together golf and food and bar and hospitality all into one here.
So were you a golfer before you joined Big Shots?
I am a golfer. I'm not as good as I used to be, and golf's a tough game to master. But yeah, I worked at a country club in high school, caddied, and so I've always just loved golf. And this was a real fun way to kind of put together a bunch of passions all in one.
Yeah, no kidding. We've had a couple of good discussions about golf on the show in the last 6 months. It's interesting. I love golf and I play as often as I can, but you're right, it's tough to master and, you know, all those things. But we've actually had the discussion about golf being therapy on the show before, about the mental health side of, you know, how it actually is sometimes very good for people mentally.
Oh, yeah. You know, there's not a lot of silver linings with COVID, but I think the golf industry was perhaps one of the biggest beneficiaries because it was an outdoor thing. The growth of the game had really stagnated prior to that, and it exploded during COVID. It's very tough to get a tee time at a golf course, or country club memberships now are filled up. A lot of people on waiting lists here. And yeah, it's maddening while you're playing it, but in a lot of ways, it's really just kind of to get outside. I love to walk and carry my bag and, you know, just stop thinking about your cell phone and answering emails and work and all that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So you said that there are 7 locations with Big Shots. I mean, and so how old is the company? 3-4 years?
So our parent company bought this a few years ago from the founder who came up with the idea, the golf technology. Obviously, there's a big 800-pound gorilla in this industry that paved the runway for this. And, you know, mad respect for everything that they've done because, you know, if we go to put 180-foot high nets up in there, everybody thinks they know what they're getting in their town, which helps us. And we obviously have to educate them on how we're different. But we bought this brand from an individual and he had signed a bunch of franchise agreements. We kind of bought the brand right before I got here, cleaned up a lot of those franchise agreements, but our first few locations actually opened as a franchise, as franchisees, which is kind of backwards from what most brands do. So our first 4 locations that were opened were franchised. The next 3 that we've opened were corporately owned, or one of them is a franchise owned, but we operate it, which is kind of more of what we're trying to do. We're trying to do a mix of owning or operating, which is how our country club model works. And
interesting.
So we have our own gaming and our own technology. You know, we're similar to the other place, a little smaller, going into smaller towns, but it's a golf entertainment facility where we try and differentiate. We have an internal line that says always better, AL ways better. You know, we're not the first, so we have to be better. And so we're trying to do better food, better golf tech, a better guest experience. And the big gorilla out there does a great job. I mean, they really do.
They do.
They've really paved the runway. So kudos to them. We're going into smaller markets. We have to have more frequency because there's less people that live there. And so instead of just coming in 1 or 2 times a year for a special occasion, we are trying to get them to come in all the time. We have a branded restaurant in our venues called Anthem Kitchen and Bar. And, you know, I want somebody, when they look at their phone, to say, hey, where restaurants near me? Well, if Big Shots Golf comes up, nobody's going to go there to eat. But if they see Anthem Kitchen and Bar and they look at the menu and it's a kick-ass sports bar and they look at, where is it? Well, it's inside Big Shots Golf. And so, you know, we've just tried to drive frequency into our venues through things like that and a lot of programming like, you know, themed trivia nights and karaoke and some of those other fun things that you might not think of doing, but we have to do that in our venues because we're in smaller markets.
It makes total sense. And I mean, you and I were chatting right before we jumped on the show today about this other company that exists a couple little locations in Canada. And, you know, I've got friends who go and play once a week all year round in the middle of the winter with heaters and they're wearing a, you know, winter coat and still playing golf. I mean, the frequency concept really makes sense.
It does. And I don't mind. Your Launchpad up in Calgary does a great job. I think curiosity is a leadership superpower. And so, you know, when I got here, I knew what I knew from the main competitor, but I've gone out and we built our first few locations. But as we move forward in our brand, we've looked at, there are things like what Launchpad does with automatic ball, you know, the tee automatically tees it up for you. It's adjustable. Man, everybody hates that in the existing venues. The tee height's one height. It's too small. It's too low for the driver. It's too high for a brand new person learning to hit an iron. So, you know, they have neon lit targets out in the range. So there's a little more interactivity. So we actually spent, as we were opening our locations, a large amount of time visiting all the competitive socializing places so that as we build our new prototype coming into late 2024, when our next wave of facilities will open, we're going to essentially have the best of the putting concepts, the best of the indoor simulator concepts, and the best of the outdoor range concepts all in one place, because we do want to move into major markets. We do want to drive revenues, and we have to have a better product. I can't put my current product today anywhere near the existing product because they're so well known that best known beats best, I think is a slogan I've heard a long time ago.
Sure.
So if we want to beat the best known, we have to essentially build a better mousetrap entirely.
Yeah. So competitive entertainment, I heard you say that. Is that sort of what you call the category?
Yeah, it's called, I think, competitive socializing is really so you look at, especially like we have a venue over in the UK. So I've been over there a number of times and they've got, F1 has a facility now and there's darts and there's actually a soccer or football one over there called Toca Social. Over here in the US, I've seen baseball, cricket, basketball. There's all these kind of competitive socializing places, let alone all the, you know, the indoor amusement parks and trampoline parks and things that are kind of more in the family entertainment center that are geared for a younger crowd. But, you know, the putting concepts here have exploded in the U.S. And there's a number of them, indoor, outdoor.
Yeah.
There's probably four brands I can think of off the top of my head. And it's just, it's a great way for people to go out, get together, have a little fun. It's, you know, it's kind of just modernizing the old bowling alley and some of those things that are the only things to do from a competitive socializing back in the day.
Well, and even the bowling alley thing is starting to come back. I mean, there's a few concepts that I've seen that are essentially a full nightclub with a with bowling alleys in them. And they're really hard to even, you know, get a reservation in those places where every other bowling alley in the market might not be all that busy. So,
you know, I think it's, you look at the consumer, you kind of merging sports and hospitality. It's not back in the day when I was growing up, it was the bowling alley had a snack bar and, you know, they may have served beer. And now what you look at, I mean, there's axe throwing, there's escape rooms. I mean, this stuff just keeps going on and on, but everybody is trying to create an elevated food or bar experience and adding some sort of technology. Cause I think going back to my Chuck E. Cheese days, the one thing I learned from them that you have to keep your brand relevant and fresh. And you look at a lot of restaurants and especially a lot of family entertainment centers and the competitive socializing places, their first year is the busiest year. And that's not a way to run a healthy business. You can keep building a bunch of those, but at some point the new growth can't outpace the same store sales decline. You have to have that ability, whether it's through technology or facility refreshes, to go in there and reinvent it. And Chuck E. Cheese has perfected that. They're 45 years into this thing. It's still cranking away. And I look at the landscape out there, and I think in 5 or 10 years, a lot of these players are going to be gone because the newness and the gimmick that you're built around will wear off. I mean, pickleball is one of these things that's gone insane lately around here in the U.S. And it's great. I play pickleball. I love it. It's awesome. But it's also, it's all about the spectator experience. And I think that's where a lot of people miss the boat. In these places, you've got to, if you're putting, well, you're not going to be, you know, playing mini golf the whole time or putting. You're going to be either watching others or you're waiting for your turn to play. So, you know, the people that are in this space really have to ensure they understand the spectator experience as well.
Yeah, great point. And I really like, you know, we try to always make sure on any of our episodes that there are, for anyone who's listening, maybe some takeaways that people can go, okay, you know, if I'm running a business, whether it's in competitive socializing or, you know, sports and entertainment or just a restaurant, maybe it's a corner family restaurant in, you know, whatever market, we want to make sure that they have some sort of takeaways. And I think you just said that your first year can't be your busiest year and you have to reinvent. I think that's a really good piece of advice. So we'll try to catch in a couple other ones from you, but that's a really good one.
I mean, I think the other thing, if you guys follow me on LinkedIn or whatever, I do a lot of leadership tips and I have a big business crush on a few brands. I think Walk-On Sports Bar does a great job. They've kind of just taken that sports bar experience, but having gotten to experience how they train their employees and some of the culture, and just as a little piece that I've learned from them that I put in here, you know, when you go to, when you play college basketball as an example, if you redshirt your freshman year, you're not allowed to play, but you're part of the team. And so when you go to Walk-Ons as a new employee, all the new employees wear red shirts until they make the team when they're done with training. So we did something like that here, similar Big Shots. We gave everybody a green shirt because everybody's green until they're ready. And then we give them the real uniform shirts. And so, you know, we studied things like that. And so, you know, we pull pieces from other hospitality companies. The PAL Sudden Service is like the master company for how to just set up really structured systems to replicate growth. And I think the one that we've really pulled from lately here is the Savannah Bananas baseball team. They basically just reinvented baseball and called it, you know, banana ball and reinvented the rules. And, you know, when you look at just making the experience fun for the fan in their case, and for us, it's for the spectator. And so really, if I was running a restaurant today, and we are, I mean, we have a pretty high volume food service operation in our facilities, but I've been in the restaurant business since I was 16. And you look at the ability to personalize the experience, deliver the experience that guest wants. And the nice thing is now we have technology. We might have their name if they placed an order online to pick it up. We might have a reservation system so that we know they have a birthday celebration when they come in, and using all those little clues to really wow the guest with that technology, no matter what business you're in. in the hospitality Absolutely. World. Those are some simple takeaways that I would encourage everybody to do.
So your restaurant, Anthem, is it, because a lot of the places, and I need to make sure I say this right, but the competitive socializing businesses, yeah. a lot of them, you're in the space, you're playing the games, you're doing your thing, and your food comes there. Is Anthem yeah. a separate dining space?
It is. So we have, I think when a lot of these places, you know, especially in our case in the golf entertainment world, you get on a long wait on a Friday night or Saturday. One of the challenges in our business is you have, whether you have 30 tee boxes or 100, they're booked on Friday nights and Saturdays. And so when somebody comes in and they have to wait 2 hours, I don't want them to go eat somewhere else. I certainly don't want them to go off property. So I want them to come in and eat in our restaurant. The competitor did this long ago. We didn't invent this, but we want them to come to Anthem just to eat, whether they play golf or not. You know, Monday to Thursday, I have plenty of excess capacity. Come on in and have some great burgers. We do hand-breaded wings. We do an elevated sports bar food because, again, I need them to come in frequently. Mm-hmm. I want them to come watch the game, host their draft, fantasy football draft party here in our venue. And you have to have better food. When you're first and you own the market, you don't have to focus on these things because there's no other choice. And any of us that get into this space, the one thing I still get a lot of phone calls from people, and I've met with the guys in the cricket places and the baseball places, and we had the same thing here. We try and overdo the food from a menu standpoint. We had kale this and quinoa that, and you know what? When people are here, they want burgers and wings, and the quinoa and the kale didn't sell. And everybody tries to differentiate themselves so much on the menu. We hired a food consultant that does a phenomenal job, and I can give somebody their information off the air. Hit me up on LinkedIn. But they came in, and they're well respected. They said, "Do not change your burgers. Do not change your wings. They are top notch. But here's how you can simplify some things in operations." And we took 2 points out of cost of goods sold. We took 20% out of our service times by simplifying our menu and making it easier for our kitchen to get the food out faster, make sure it's right. So instead of trying to do, you know, the quinoa grain bowl with pepitas and dried blueberries and pepadu peppers, and, you know, Billy Joe's coming into our venue here in Texas going, "I don't even know what all that crap is. Just give me a burger." You know, sometimes we try and outthink the consumer, and you just need middle of the fairway food that's really damn good, and people will come back for it.
That's a great golf analogy. Middle of the fairway food. Yeah. And you know, you're right. There's so much going on right now, I think, in terms of menu engineering and menu creativity and, you know, innovation in the food side of the business. But when you look at, you know, the type of consumer that goes out the most, and you look at what's the easiest way to remain profitable and battle all these rising costs, I mean, what you're talking about completely makes sense.
Well, and to me, a lot of that's a byproduct of, again, COVID forced all the restaurants to simplify. Well, now the guests are into this 2, 3, and 4 years. I can't go to McDonald's and get grilled chicken or a salad anymore. You know what? I used to go there to get that. Mm-hmm. I can't anymore. And it's made their operation a lot simpler. I think they're a lot busier than they used to be. You know, obviously they have a drive-through, so it's a little bit different deal. But I think that, you know, COVID kind of trained the consumer to, one, you know, do a lot of third-party and delivery. And I think their bar for food standards has lowered, which is not great. But, you know, everybody's different. I order Chipotle. I order on the app. I go across the highway and I go pick it up. My marketing guy orders Chipotle through DoorDash, and I look at him and go, "Why'd you spend $8 more to get your food?" And he tells me, "Well, you know, my time's worth $8. And I said, "Yeah, but my food's made 30 minutes later than yours and tastes a hell of a lot better." So we have different needs. You know, he just wants it easy. I want good food. And so I think as you look at your restaurant, again, it has nothing to do with sports. Just sell what the consumer wants. Don't get into all these, you know, pare your menu down and do it really well, and you'll do well.
That's good advice. Can we switch gears a little bit and talk about the people side of the business?
Yeah.
Because everybody's talking about, I was speaking to somebody from, actually from Seven Shifts yesterday. I'm not sure if you're familiar with them. Mm-hmm. And they just did a huge survey with thousands of operators across North America. And the number one challenge that every operator told them they were facing was turnover. The number two was how to manage labor costs. And number three was just dealing with inflation. So how's the people side of the business for you guys?
I probably have a very contrarian view to the staffing crisis that everybody says. Now, part of it is, you know, I've written many books on how to run a restaurant, how to hire. I was very fortunate in my career to work for so many people that taught me how to create the right culture to attract the right kind of people. Mm-hmm. And so when we got here, again, I grew a sandwich brand as a franchisee to 17 units, and we were averaging $500,000-$600,000 a year. You can add a zero and then someone to what we're doing here today. So I've managed in fact, I still have one which restaurant. I got 10 employees there. I do $500,000 a year. And over here, I got 150 employees in a venue doing, you know, at least a comma more than that. Mm-hmm. And it, to me, it all hinges on the general manager. You have a great general manager that understands how to build a team of managers. Now, in my case, in a sandwich shop, I just need some supervisors. And then running a Big Shots golf, I need a lot of managers to run these venues and build the teams. And so our marketing team and the group that was here before I got here did a phenomenal job creating our brand story. So we already had the tagline, "Here, everyone's a big shot." I got here and I was like, great, that's going to be our guest service mantra. I can build my whole employee experience around that. And so it fit into the high level thing here. Then we find people that we know can execute on that level. And we struggle just like everybody else. You hire some managers that might not be ready to deal with this, or they, you know, we're a brand new brand and we didn't have everything figured out. We're building the runway while we're flying the plane. Mm-hmm. And somebody that's come out of a very systematic brand or a chain, it was tough for them to come into this brand where it's like, I don't have the checklist done yet. You got to help me build it.
You got to build it.
And so we did struggle with things like that. And we have turnover, but we have really done everything to funnel up into the "Here, everyone's a big shot" mantra. And you hire the right GMs to execute on that, and they'll be the ones that will hire the right people. And it's a little tougher when you have to hire 150 versus 10.
For sure.
But I'm very proud of what we've built here with our team, because the brand and the marketing team had done it before we got started. And then we just took that, and as we brought in a new training team and an operations team, they got exactly what we were looking for. And then we put things into place, such as we have an employee loyalty program. We use a thing called Bonusly. So our employees, we run contests. You know, they go right in, they get points, they can go buy gift cards. We use a text-based kind of a micro-learning platform to send out information to the employees on the front line, because communication's tough. You know, when you get lots of layers, especially as you get bigger. Mm-hmm. And so we use this thing called Go Happy, and it's a text-based platform. So my head of culinary, he can communicate. We're getting ready to roll out some new menu items in early September. He can communicate right with them, short videos, exactly what to do. The servers, here's how you sell it. The front desk, here's what you describe it to the guests as you're taking them to the tee box. And so we just give the people what they need, when they need, where they need, and help them continue to grow. And I think if you do a lot of those kind of things, recruitment challenges are a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you think it's a problem, you're right. If you don't think it's a problem, you're right.
That's good. And Bonusly, I've had a couple of really good conversations with people about Bonusly lately, that it seems to be a very innovative, very cool, you know, exciting platform. I think anytime that people can reward each other and, you know, benefit from good performance, I mean, let's be honest, it helps with the buy-in. So that's great.
Yep.
Well done. One other quick question for you about the people side of things. And again, you said, if you think it's an issue, you're right. If you don't think it's an issue, you're right. Do you see this labor challenge in the hospitality industry? Do you see this changing big picture anytime in the next couple of years? People ask me this all the time. Is it one more year? Is it two more years? My take on it is that it's been an issue forever. We just didn't look at it that way.
I'm 56. Wait, I'm 57. I'm getting old. I can't remember how old I'm. But 41 years ago, when I applied at Chuck E. Cheese when I was 16 years old, my dad said to me, "Oh, you guys are so, y'all have it so easy. This generation's lazy. You're self-entitled. You have it so good." Fast forward when, you know, I'm in the real world and I'm saying the same thing. So everything's changed and nothing's changed. I think happened to us is, you know, the wages are getting pushed up significantly quicker than we can raise prices. And again, going back to menu simplification, we have to make it easier for our staff to run the business. The days of yesteryear where we're working open to close and we could just, you know, almost abuse the employees and just say, look, yeah, go get another job. Well, guess what? There's millions of them they can go get now. So the employee does have the leverage today. And we just need to make sure we simplify and simplify, use technology where you can. I mean, think about quick service and, you know, I don't order Chipotle. I don't wait in line. I order on my app, or a lot of places you're ordering on kiosks. And so you do have to leverage technology to make your lives a lot easier and address the labor problem in other ways other than addressing the labor problem, because the restaurant industry is tough. You know, we don't have a great reputation out there, but there are plenty of brands, the Chick-fil-A's of the world, the Pals, and In-N-Outs that are just nailing it. And, you know, they're not paying $25 an hour for somebody to cook hamburgers or ring up stuff on a register. They have a great system. They provide people a path to get that real job, six-figure income down the road. And it's not for everybody. It's very structured. It's very rigid. And you just got to decide what your pain point's going to be. Maybe I have to invest in a little tech to save the, you know, save the labor. But, you know, when you look at overall, just look at the franchisee, look at the owner, look at the GM. That's the key to solving the problem.
Well said. And the technology and innovation thing, you've mentioned Chipotle a couple times. If anybody hasn't seen their new avocado machines that cut, peel, and chop avocados in order to make guacamole faster than any person ever could, I mean, there's some pretty solid innovation right there, right?
Yep.
Can't thank you enough for joining. One thing I want to make sure that we get for everybody, you mentioned a couple of books. How do we find those?
There, now that I have a real job here, I don't have my own website anymore. But if you go to Amazon and just look up Smart Restaurant Guides, or my franchise group was called Smart Restaurant Group. So it's kind of the opposite of the Dummies books that we've built a smart restaurant guide to operations, another one for recruitment, another one for catering. And there's simple, practical tips to help people run their restaurants or their hospitality business a little bit better.
Amazing. And there were a couple other sort of nuggets that you had around, you know, your first year shouldn't be your busiest, and the GM management team thing, I think, is brilliant and completely accurate. The best way for people to get a hold of you if they have questions is that LinkedIn?
Yeah, I think just, you know, just hit me up on LinkedIn, or just tj.scher@bigshotsgolf.com. I've been in a training organization called CHART. It's a Council of Hotel and Restaurant Trainers for 30 years since I've worked at Chuck E. Cheese. And I call us the AA of trainers. We get together, we all say, I have a problem. And then somebody in that group has helped us solve that problem. So I love sharing and learning. There's nothing confidential or probably even unique of what I just told you guys. It's somebody else, you've heard it before. We just forgot. And that's why I love doing my leadership lessons from the driving range. I just do kind of 1-minute updates. Hey, I was in a webinar the other day about performance management here in my job. And one of the ladies was saying, here's how you have a difficult conversation. I've done this for 40 years. I've never heard it. I was like, oh my gosh, this is so simple. What a great way to have a conversation with a 30-year employee that won't change. Boom, put it out there. Hopefully that'll benefit somebody out there down the road. And we'll slowly get our industry into having a great reputation as a great place to work.
I couldn't agree more. And in terms of your comment about some business crushes, when Walk On Sports Bistro, you mentioned them.
Yeah.
A quick shout out, Chris Williams, who's their director of brand, culture, and training. Him and I, we've had the chance to connect a few times. He's been on the show. And he actually wrote an amazing article about culture in the restaurant industry for us that went out yesterday. So I'll make sure that you actually get a chance to see it. But I couldn't agree more. They're doing some really good stuff. And we need to, let's be honest, let's add Big Shots to that list, because I follow you guys really closely. So continue to do what you're doing. And thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate you taking the time. And I know you're a busy guy. So thanks again.
That was great. Appreciate it. Thanks.
We'll chat with you soon. Thanks, TJ.
See ya.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Turning the Table with me, Adam Lamb, and Jim Taylor. We're on a mission to change the food and beverage industry for the better by focusing on staff mental health, physical and emotional well-being, by proactively measuring and managing staff workloads. Join other hospitality professionals co-creating the hashtag New Hospitality Culture by subscribing to our weekly newsletter at www.turningthetablepodcast.com/news. In every edition, you'll find innovative solutions ready to test and validate in your operation this weekend. Plus, listen to exclusive bonus content just for you. Connect with us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram at Turning the Table Podcast. If you found value in this episode, please consider leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify. Give us a star rating. It helps other hospitality professionals just like you find the show. Or better yet, grab the show link and share it with a friend or colleague who you want to see succeed. Thanks for stepping in and speaking out for an industry, craft, and fraternity that serves us all. Remember, retention is the new cool, y'all. This podcast was written, directed, and produced by me, Adam Lamb, and Jim Taylor. Turning the Table is a production of Realignment Media.